All right. Another episode here of Confessions of a Street Broker, and a good long time friend of mine and just really stud retail broker, tenant rep, Rob Franks.
Man, glad to be here.
Yeah.
I appreciate you having me.
Rob Franks, JLL Managing Director. Yep. So anyways, what's cool about this is we've just been friends for about 20 years.
It has been, for sure. It's been a long time.
Yeah.
We both changed a lot over 20 years, yeah. But it's been good. Glad to be here, man.
Yeah, absolutely. This is going to be pretty interesting because it's especially in the last couple of weeks, I've just got to learn a lot more about y'all's world of sure. things. Let's get into something really important here, but like, how do you feel about pulling the number one quarterback out of Texas for the Gators?
You know, I thought we were going to lose him to A&M at the last minute. So that was a big win for us.
Yeah.
We'd agreed, you know, he'd been committed forever and kind of helped put together the class and the whole thing. And then, you know, we thought at the last minute, A&M stepped up with some big numbers. And so it was touch and go there, but got it done. And he's a stud.
Yeah.
We're glad to have him. He's a, you know, number one quarterback recruit in the country.
Yeah.
Super good kid, great family, checks all the boxes. We've got a returning starter, so I think he's got 1 year to kind of learn and
get progress.
And then after that, it's his.
What drew him to Florida, do you know?
So he and Napier really hit it off.
Okay.
And so, you know, very early on, Napier knew, to be honest, if we didn't land him,
yeah.
I don't think Napier makes it through the year.
Yeah.
So Napier knew that he needed that kind of marquee player. And mm-hmm. we lost a couple guys on signing day at the last minute.
Yeah.
That, you know, one went to Auburn and what have you. And so nowadays with NIL, it's such a money game. It's, you know, it's hard to keep track of all that. But we lost some guys. But, I mean, he stayed committed the entire time. And I think he knew he could kind of help return the program to the prominence that it once was.
Yeah.
And honestly, really should be. I mean, we got all the resources. We've got the facilities now. So, I mean, there's no excuse for us to not have a top-notch program.
Right.
And it all starts there. You know that.
And so did y'all have to make an NIL, pretty hefty NIL package for him?
It's a big number.
Yeah. What was it?
I can't disclose that.
Oh,
I wasn't a part of the conversation. I got a third person.
Yeah, so, I got you.
You know, but it's amazing what these kids are getting now.
So I'll tell you what was really cool too, is before the college football season started this year, they had the Florida Gators. What was it called? The Swamp.
Swamp Kings.
Swamp Kings.
Yeah,
yes.
Totally.
I watched that and I wanted to run through a brick wall when it was over.
I was a little worried that, you know, they were really going to blast us with Hernandez yeah. and, you know, some of the other stuff that happened. And
yeah.
they touched on it, but it was way more of a puff piece than I thought it was going to be going
yeah.
into it. So it was a win for us. I think it showed Florida in a good light.
Yeah.
And, you know, Urban being a part of it, I think it was, hey, I'm only going to do this if we're,
yeah,
talking about the positives, not
yeah.
just some of the stuff that went on with
yeah.
the arrests and whatever else. So I think he knew that it had to be the producers knew that it had to have a certain swing to it.
Yeah.
And it did, and we loved it. And
yeah.
it was a trip down memory lane for me. So
yeah.
I watched it opening night,
yeah.
you know, geeked out. It
yeah.
was fantastic.
Yeah, it was great.
Yeah.
Well, that's what, you know, my whole in-laws, they're all Florida Gators. And so,
I love it.
Like, you know, we... they're all pumped because their Florida will be at A&M this year. So
we'll be at Texas this year.
Oh, Texas. Yeah. I'm sorry.
Yeah, we'll be
right.
in Austin.
Be in Texas. Yeah.
So we've already gotten our hotel room and,
yeah.
you know, trying to figure it out, but we'll be there.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Well, so on that.
Well, hold on. Before we move on from that,
oh.
I mean, I just wanted to bring you a little something.
Oh,
just
my gosh.
A studio gift.
I don't know if I need this. I think the last time we were together and I was drinking this, I made a complete ass of myself.
That's all right. That's all right. I'm here for it, man. I wanted to be a part of it again. So,
well, thank you
for having me, man.
Yeah,
I appreciate it.
Absolutely. That's badass. So,
I appreciate it.
That will get drink for sure. So, so let's start there with the Florida talk. You're from
yep.
Florida,
born and raised.
So, start there.
Yeah, sure. So, born and raised in Gainesville
yeah.
when, you know, when it came time to go to college, I had a scholarship to any state school in Florida. Mm-hmm. And I remember telling my dad, like, man, you know, I should probably get out of town and go somewhere else and kind of spread my wings. And I said, I don't want to go to Central Florida. It's a commuter school or, mm-hmm. you know, any of the directional schools. I'm like, Dad, I want to go look at Florida State. You yeah. know, and I remember my dad looking at me and he says, we don't go to Florida State. I'm like, Dad, come on. Like, you know, it'd be fun. I get to go to Tallahassee and live in a dorm and do yeah. the whole thing. And he said, no, you won't be welcome back in this house. And he was serious. I said, okay. And so, you know, luckily got into Florida. It yeah. was, you know, great experience. Lived at home for a few years and then, you know, graduated from Florida, the company I was working for at the time. I went from working in the store to taking over the marketing department to my senior year in college. Mm-hmm. I was running their real estate department. So okay.
Who is this?
So it was a group called Rhino Video Games.
Okay. Yeah.
So we started with 8 locations when mm-hmm. I got there. And by the time we sold to Blockbuster, we had 75.
Okay.
And so just, you know, I'm going to school full time, but I'm basically getting a master's in real estate.
Yeah.
And it was drinking out of a fire hose. You know, back then we were working, you know, 50 hours a week driving around the Southeast trying to do deals
yeah.
and watching classes on your, you know, back then you were taping them and yeah. watching them on your TV when you got home. Mm-hmm. So grade suffered, but but I graduated and great experience. I wouldn't trade that for the world. My first ICSC event was actually in Las Vegas. I was 20 years old and was just like, this is the best business in the world.
Yeah.
You know, we're in a stretch limousine headed to a party and I'm like, I'm meant to do this for the rest of my life. And so
I'm in,
fully committed. And so fell in love with the business and fell in love with real estate. And so Blockbuster acquired us. Year after I graduated, they moved Jess and I mm-hmm. out here. That was 20 years ago.
Yeah.
So did Blockbuster for about 3 years. We went from doing 150 stores a year to zero.
Yeah.
You know, pulled the e-brake and it was actually a great experience. Started doing lease renegotiations and downsizes and closures and reloads and the whole thing. And so yeah. that last year that I was there, I learned a ton, but we weren't doing new deals. And that was my passion.
Yeah.
And so got a phone call from FedEx office mm-hmm. and they wanted to open up 500 stores. And
yeah.
I thought, let's go. So yeah. I left Blockbuster, went to FedEx, was there for 2 years. We had a great run. We got to 500. Mm-hmm. 2008 hits and kind of the world changes.
Yeah.
And I thought, you know, I don't want to go through renewals again and closures and all of that. I yeah. got to get out of here. So made the jump to JLL. Mm-hmm. That was 15 years ago. Started as a director of real estate. We were basically an outsourced real estate program for retailers.
Okay.
So rather than hiring a bunch of guys like me, you could mm-hmm. outsource it to us. Mm-hmm. We would go out and transact on your behalf. So T-Mobile, Bridgestone Firestone, BBVA Compass, we would do their deals in our territory. So yeah. Did that for a handful of years and JLL came back to us and said, hey, we want to get into retail brokerage as yeah. well. And, you know, I never really envisioned myself as a broker. That wasn't my deal. I yeah. thought I'm going to continue to learn and earn my stripes. And eventually I'm going to go back and be a chief development officer for
yeah.
somebody.
Yeah.
And so I thought, all right, I'll get licensed. So I was the first retail broker in Texas, one of the first in the country. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, started doing it off the side of my desk. So still doing my day job, but doing some brokerage work off to the side mm-hmm. and just fell in love with it. You yeah. know, the idea that you could kind of eat what you kill and control your own destiny and yeah. work with who you want to work with and all of those different things. It's brokerage just, you know, totally changed my life, really changed yeah. my mindset.
So they kind of started the JLL retail platform there. Is that
they did? Yeah. Yeah. 100%. So, yeah. And so, you know, again, I think I was broker number 2 on the retail side.
Yeah.
And now we're up to, you know, 240 across the country.
Yeah.
So awesome. It's crazy how that changes. But, you know, my path was a little bit different into brokerage. Yeah. You know, a lot of the guys you talk to and mm-hmm. honestly, just a lot of people in the business, right? You start when you're 23 years old, fresh out of school, you don't know any better.
Yeah.
You know, my transition happened at 30.
Yeah.
And it was like, the great news for me was that I had the T-Mobiles of the world that mm-hmm. were going to continue to pay. You know, I had a backstop.
Yeah.
I knew that I could continue to feed my family and
yeah.
and do what I needed to do while making the jump into brokerage. So I kind of had a running start, got into brokerage, fell in love with it. And, you know, it's been, I don't know, probably 13 years now that it's yeah. been just tenant rep brokerage. And I went from managing a team of, you know, 12 to 15 people, multiple accounts, doing that day in and day out mm-hmm. to really you know, going 1099 and being your own boss and eating what you kill. So it was an unexpected transition, but it couldn't have been better for me.
Well, you know, so that's not the same path, but very similar, right? Like I didn't start brokering until I was 30.
Okay.
You know, I started off when I was 24 managing Class B and C industrial assets. You know, I was doing the property management.
Sure.
Cutting distribution checks to owners being like, what?
How do I get some of these?
Right. And, but at the same time, I was also, I had the steel company that I'd bought off my dad. And, and so I was a tenant,
right.
You know, in an industrial building.
Sure.
I moved when I got a bad lease proposal. So, you know, it helped me when I went into the brokerage side of things and gave up all that stuff and just said, hey, look, you know, I'm trying to get you to move your business.
Right.
I've actually done it.
Right.
Like I know what's going to happen. I know I know where all the bodies are buried on this, the tangible and intangible cost of doing it. So it sounds like you took a very, you know, similar path of being on the, you know, you were the client.
That's right.
You know, and so you knew
100%.
You knew what works, what doesn't work, you know what I mean? And so then you can turn around and use that knowledge on the brokerage side and kind of really provide a ton of value for your client because of that. So,
totally. There's nothing that a client's going to go through that I haven't lived firsthand, right? You want to present to the board, you want to create a market plan, you want to formulate strategy and execution. I've done all of that, right? And, you know, I think that definitely helps as we're talking to clients. It's like, I see it through your eyes, right? Yeah. And that's why I've always been a tenant rep guy.
Yeah.
You know, we'll do some agency stuff if we're selling a building for a client, but, you know, 99% of everything I do is tenant rep work. And it's like, that's what I know.
Yeah.
You know, I don't need to have a sign up there getting phone calls from one-off nail salons. I'm not your guy.
Yeah.
But if you want somebody that understands how to market plan an area and go out and execute on that strategy, I've done that for my entire career.
Yeah. Yeah. So you're working with tenants where it's like, hey, we need to roll out X amount of stores this region, and
totally
Rob's on the street looking at sites, figuring it all out, getting them all together, knowing. What's really fascinating to me is like all the other things that come into play besides the actual piece of real estate.
That's right.
With retail. Like with industrial, it's really form, fit, and function, right? But with retail, I mean, what are all the factors that come into a site? Like,
there's a ton. I mean, we've got a whole team that is just research and GIS functions that all feed what we do, right? Yeah. So, you know, we have everything from people that are in the market that, hey, I would love, very opportunistic, right? If you bring me a great site, we'll go do the deal. Mm-hmm. To others that are coming in that are, it's a clean slate, nothing in town today.
Yeah.
We know that we want to open up, you know, whatever, 30 stores over the next 5 years. How do we do that? And so we can sit down with our GIS team and we create competition analytics, store performance analytics, demographics, all of that goes into it. We create an online platform tool for them that they can access at any point in time, pull all the different block groups and, you know, look at competitor sales, look at, you know, store, all of that stuff factors into, hey, where do we want to be? And then we create kind of a market tiered approach, right? So tier one, tier two, prioritize all of those trade areas. Mm-hmm. And now it's on us to go out and source the real estate and execute on those.
Yeah. So there's a level of other similar competitors, 100%. What their store does in that area.
That's
then you get down into retail, like, oh, well, you can't turn left into that site.
Oh,
and that, like, you know, we used to office in Las Colinas, and there was this restaurant. It was a restaurant site on the, I guess it would be the south side of 114 right there.
Yeah.
And man, it has changed hands. So, but the ingress and egress on it is just terrible. Like, no one can get there.
Yeah.
You know?
So we call those Statue of Liberty sites.
Okay.
So you can see it, you just can't get to it.
Yeah.
And I mean, nothing can kill a deal faster than that. You pull up and you're like, this thing's landlocked. How do I access this?
Yeah.
So that's a major function of what we do as well, is, you know, left in, left, you know, right in, right out, all these full signal, the whole thing. And depending on what you're doing, it can be significant. Restaurants, especially.
Yeah.
You know, T-Mobile, for instance, who's been a client of mine for 15 years, they want to be top of mind, right? Great visibility in the right area, but that's not as vitally important. Obviously, you'd love to have full signal and full access, but at the end of the day, it's not an impulse purchase for the most part. You know you're going to go get a new cell phone.
Yeah.
And it's okay if it's, you know, not perfect. But a restaurant, that can make or break a site in a heartbeat.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, this isn't as critical as a restaurant site, but we were looking at this big portfolio of properties. And when I got the portfolio, there was a set of assets that are on I-30 that I was like, man, I've always seen these buildings and I've always loved them. I just didn't know who owned them.
Right.
And they were in this portfolio. So like we go site tour every building and go walk it. And every, you know, this like six multi-tenant complexes.
Right.
And we get to this one, the one I'm most excited about, and getting to it was a nightmare. Right. I was like, this is going to be a total whip.
Dead in the water.
Like it, like honestly, what I thought would be the most exciting thing about the portfolio was the least exciting thing. And it was one of the biggest things that killed it for me. So, you know, I don't know. It was just fascinating to me, this restaurant. I mean, it's like, I remember we would go eat there and this guy had a barbecue restaurant there and it was great. And I was just like, man, you ain't gonna make it, bro.
Right.
Like you're just not going to make it.
You know, at the end of the day, Dallas has so many options for food and beverage, right? You know, I joke we don't have, you know, mountains and streams and rivers and all of that stuff. We just eat and drink our way through our good times. And, you know, that's what we do for recreation, right? Yeah. It's how many times have we been out to dinner? How many times have we been out, you know, with the wives and bouncing around Legacy or whatever it may be? It's like, that's your enjoyment. We're not hooking up to go hike or to go fly fishing or whatever. And it's like, you know, food and beverage is a way of life here.
Yeah.
And, you know, you look at some of our store sales and people from outside the market are blown away that you get the volumes out of these facilities that we do. And it's like, you know, I don't know about you guys, but we go out to eat or get takeout, you know, probably 3 to 4 days a week. And there's a lot of places in the country. That's just not the way of life.
We were talking about this the other day. It's like our, you know, when we grew up, we never went out to eat.
No. Like, and if you did, you went to the Olive Garden.
You went to Olive Garden or Chili's.
Yeah.
And Steak and Ale was...
That was my high school graduation. We celebrated.
Something very special had happened.
Yeah, with the salad bar.
You could get up and go to a salad bar.
But yeah, no, without a doubt, it's like, you know, we were not... My kids are, you know, every night it's like, hey, where are we going for dinner? What are we, are you bringing home sushi?
Yeah.
It's like, we didn't have that conversation growing up.
No, I didn't even have sushi till I was in my 20s.
Yeah. No, my kids love it.
I mean,
we have it at least once a week.
Well, I mean, why not? It's readily available. I don't, do y'all go to Sushi Bene?
We do not. We've been there, but
I like that place a lot.
Yeah. We're fans of Koshi.
Where's Koshi?
So that's Stonebrook and 380.
Oh, okay. There. Yeah. I've been there too.
Mm-hmm. It's very good.
Yeah. It's not that much further, but Sushi Bene is like literally you could walk there from our houses.
Stumble home from there.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. So, well, so on the retail side of things, like when you're, you know, when you're trying to acquire, you know, like a new tenant, like what's, you know, what's your cold call process? You're looking for the director of real estate and then what from there? Like,
you know, I'm at the point in my career that I candidly, I just don't cold call a ton.
Yeah.
So much of what I do is relationship based. Yeah. It's, you know, my contact at X company has left and has gone to Y company.
Yeah.
And I'm going to follow them there for that business. Or, you know, Y company is growing in Florida, doesn't have any outposts in Texas. Mm-hmm. And I know that our Florida guys are working with them. How can I get in front of that business?
Yeah.
But, you know, it can be a challenge picking up the phone and trying to get the director of real estate and, you know, hey, I'm in Dallas. I want to do your work.
Yeah.
Okay, sure.
Yeah.
Thanks for calling.
Yeah.
So does everybody else.
Yeah.
And so it's one of those, we do a lot of, you know, prospecting at the ICSC event that you were just at or through local business journals, trying to find people that are not in the market yet.
Yeah.
You know, Dallas is one of the most competitive real estate markets anywhere in the country in terms of quality talent on the brokerage side.
It's
not even close.
Dallas is like the NFL. I think you have Manhattan and then you have Dallas.
That's right. And, you know, you go to Houston, there might be 12 retail tenant broker, you know, tenant rep brokers that are good at what they do.
Yeah.
You come here, there's 70 of us that are all good at what we do.
Yeah.
You know, and so if somebody's already in the market, chances of you getting that business are probably pretty slim unless some change has occurred. And so for us, it's how do we identify those concepts before they get here? And then how do we stay close to our existing clients so that we can leverage those relationships in the future?
Yeah. Now, and so as your real estate directors move around, right, that's probably pretty common.
It is.
In your deal. I guess a lot of times when those guys move around, they probably move with the intent of, hey, I'm bringing my guys with me that 100%. I work with. Like, totally. If you have some exclusive, this probably won't work, you know, or we've got to like get that to burn off or whatever.
Totally. And most, you know, most companies want to empower their local reps to pick their guys.
Yeah.
Otherwise, if you're forcing your local real estate manager to work with somebody, then you've got to live with those results.
Yeah.
If that real estate manager is picking their own people, you got to produce right now. It's on the real estate manager to make sure that that partnership is right.
Well, I always like asking this. Did you ever have just a very awkward cold call with somebody? Like, what's the most awkward one or worst one? Or just
so I'll share a story. It's not a cold call, but it is awkward in nature. So we had a client we had a lot of success with, did a lot of deals for them. Mm-hmm. They get a new real estate manager that comes in. This is all kind of during COVID. So everything's still remote.
Yeah.
Still on Zoom, the whole thing. And I get a phone call from this guy and he says, hey, do you remember me? I said, no. He said, well, you interviewed me about 6 years ago to be a junior broker and you didn't hire me. I said, okay. He said, I think you made a bad decision. He said, we're going to make a change in our representation. And I said, you got to be kidding me. I said, you've been holding on to this for 6 years, and now you're going to bring it up? Like, this is what you're doing? He's like, yeah. Yeah, we're making a change. And so they went with a different firm. And I thought, holy cow.
Wow.
So that was the first that had ever happened to me. And honestly, that's the only account I've ever been fired from. Now, we've lost business or whatever, but that's the only account that I've ever, you know, actually been terminated. And we had a good run. We did a bunch of deals for them, and I wish him great success. He only lasted about 6 months, and then he got fired. Yeah. So actually, I made the right decision by not hiring him. But
yeah,
that's probably my most awkward, you know, business phone call. And I didn't even recognize the guy. I had no idea who he was.
Yeah.
It was like, obviously, you didn't make an impression.
Obviously, you never got into brokerage.
Obviously.
Yep. No one wanted you in brokerage.
Right.
Or you quit trying to be in brokerage because you ended up on the other side of the table, you know? Yeah.
And so, now he's on the landlord side, so.
Yeah. Whatever. Probably where he's supposed to be.
That's right. Yeah. I don't know that he has
it. You didn't hire me.
You didn't hire me.
What a whiner.
What a whiner.
Gosh. Oh, that's funny. Well, so you're the managing director, but do you really run a bunch of guys, or is this kind of you and your team? Like,
sure. So, you know, Clay Smith ran our group for a long time. He's you know, legend in retail real estate in Dallas. He passed away 5 years ago.
Okay.
And so his business partner, Mark Newman, took over. He really leads the team.
Yeah.
You know, for me, you know, I've got two priorities in my life, and it's my family first, and then making money and closing deals.
Yeah.
And that's it.
Yeah.
And if it doesn't fall in one of those two buckets, I gotta be honest, I'm not interested.
Yeah.
I just don't have time for that. Yeah. Right. I've got two little girls that are 13 and 10, and, you know, I owe everything to, you know, ensuring that they grow up the right way and dad's as present as he can be. And so the idea of, you know, managing HR and accounting and all of those things just never really appealed to me. Now, what I do love is helping people grow in the business and progress their careers and what have you. Well, I can do that without having to wear that true operational hat day in and day out. So Mark has done a fantastic job at that. He's a great resource for me.
Yeah.
But the good news is if I need something, I get to call him instead of having to go fight for it myself. So he's been fantastic. I've got a small team, you know, two juniors that work with me, and then we've got support staff that keeps us operational. So it's great.
So you got Jillian, right? And then who's your other junior?
So we got Walker Dias.
Okay.
Who is, he's kind of taking on wings and doing his thing now. And he supports both Mark Newman and myself and does a fantastic job. So he's a great kid. So he's, you know, he's getting close to upper 20s, almost 30 now, and has really started to build his business. He's got some accounts on his own and has done a wonderful job. So he's a great asset for us.
Yeah.
And then, you know, Jillian, fresh out of school, rock star.
She's a trip, man. I really enjoyed talking to her.
She's a badass.
You got a good one there.
I did. No, she's been with us for just under a year now and just does an amazing job. She's on every deal that I'm on and, you know, on every email, every phone call. And so she's drinking from a fire hose, but she's a rock star.
Yeah.
We're glad to have her.
Yeah. She was awesome. I got to meet her at ICSC and yuck it up with her. And then her and Will are from the same part of the world. And so just, you know, they went directly into Northeast talk.
Yeah, whatever. Yeah, sounds good. Sounds good. My Florida Gators just lost to her
Loyola. Yeah.
Lacrosse team on Saturday. She flew back for that game.
Oh, okay.
So I actually had to wear a sweatshirt today in the office.
Oh, that's funny.
I paid my debt. But no, she's great. We're glad to have her.
That's awesome. Yeah. No, well, let's talk about ICSC because that was very interesting to me. You know,
totally.
You know, we've started to get into just funding some pref and stuff like that, pref equity for some retail developers and stuff like that. And that was the first time I've ever been in any ICSC event. And man, just the organization of it seems a very efficient event. And 100%. That was, I mean, you showed me your calendar and it was back every 30 minutes, back to back. So the benefit of that seems like on the retail side is that, man, you can get so many in-person meetings with decision 100%. Makers on a regular basis. Now, do you go to all the shows like the?
No. So I do Texas mm-hmm. and then we've got one in Las Vegas in May.
Yeah.
And then I used to do New York every year, but I don't do that as much anymore. But
yeah.
So Vegas is our biggest one. We'll have 30,000 people there.
Yeah.
And then Texas or New York is next. They probably, you know, 10,000 people. And then Texas is probably third at, you know, 3,500 or whatever the number may be. But Texas is a great show for us. We know a ton of people on the floor.
Yeah.
You know, it starts on Tuesday, right, with happy hour. I was at your happy hour Tuesday night. You know, to Wednesday, we've got clients in town, so we're touring. Mm-hmm. We've got dinner Wednesday night, the whole thing. And then, you know, all day Thursday, we've got meetings starting at 8:30, going until 5:30 every half hour, just back to back.
Yeah.
And then it's happy hours and dinners and party and the whole thing. And then, and then Friday, the show's open from, you know, 9 until noon. And it's good. It's kind of a ghost town on Friday, but actually it's great. Nobody's there. So the folks that are there are great connections. Everybody's much more relaxed. You're walking around bumping into people and having very meaningful conversations. So it's a great event for us.
Yeah.
You know, Vegas is fantastic as well, but it's so big. Things kind of get lost. Everybody's running 100 miles an hour.
Yeah.
Whereas Texas, those are our people. Those are our deals. Yeah. And we get a lot done. It's a great show.
Yeah. No, it was really interesting, man. And it was funny. I did hear someone say, I don't know if maybe you said this, but it was like, if all the deals got done that were talked about at ICSC, Lane would be $200 a foot.
For sure. Yeah, no, that's fitting.
You know, it was just awesome, man, because there's nothing like that for industrial, nor could there be, I don't think, because you don't have, you know, you don't have a tenant that's rolling out that many sites, right?
Sure.
It's totally different train of thought. But, you know.
That sounds like a next business venture for you.
I don't want anything else in my life. there would be a way to do something, but like, I just, you know.
It would just be a bunch of brokers sitting around.
It'd be a bunch of
together.
Brokers getting drunk. And, you know, it's the industrial is so fractured, right? It's just, there's never really. You know, a tenant, an industrial tenant does one deal in a market, not, you know, 50, you know?
Right.
So I don't think there'd be a lot of benefit to it.
Yeah.
Except for the getting drunk part.
You know what, man, to be honest, that, and outside of that component of it, but just the socialization, how many relationships have you strengthened with that dynamic? How many, whether it's clients or other brokers in the market or whatever it may be, those after hours events mean so much in creating that new dynamic. You know, we had a new client that was at the show with us and we had a great, you know, good progress on the floor, but, and we toured with them the day before, but honestly, we probably got stronger after hours just spending time with them and then realizing that, you know, we're real people and it's not just it's not transactional based.
Right.
You know, we want this to be a relationship that's going to grow and evolve over time and get stronger. So, you know, that's such a key component of what we do without a doubt.
Well, I think it, you know, for us, you know, getting into this pref world of stuff and, you know, funding some of these developers, I think it's something we'll be at for the most part and, you know, go to, you know, I wasn't really set up to go to all the happy hours and all that stuff. And, you know, we're getting there, right? We're starting our fun things for that. So like when that's done, it's like, hey, we're ready to deploy, you know,
right.
And, you know, we can do some actionable things. But I think,
yeah.
I think if you actually go into ICSC with a decent business plan and you execute on about half of it, you'll probably actually walk out of there with some real live stuff to work on.
100%.
And I was just, it was just interesting, man. You know, I've always been in just one realm of commercial real estate, and there's just so many other,
without a doubt,
so many other avenues of it. And there's so much to learn, and it's so cool to see how so many other people make money with real estate and doing certain, you know, just all parts of it. And yeah. That was just really cool seeing all that, and we really enjoyed it. And you introduced us to some really cool people, and we met some really cool people. And
right.
I don't know, I'll probably try to go to the Vegas one this year too.
Let me know what I can do to help. So. And I'm happy to help kind of walk you through the schedule and what to expect, and any connections I can introduce you to, you know, I'm happy to. But you know, there's certain things. You know, we had a guy that walked up to our booth at the end of the day, guy I've known for a long time. And he says, Ralph, I've got a site that I think one of your clients would be interested in. I look at it, makes all the sense in the world. I call the client, he's across the show. I'm like, hey, I need you at my booth.
Yeah.
He comes over there. We introduce the two of them. We talk out deal terms. We just sent the LOI yesterday. And not that that conversation couldn't have happened elsewhere.
Yeah.
But the fact that we had it in person, they now both have met each other face to face. We agreed to terms sitting on the floor of the show.
Yeah.
Right. Like it's fantastic. We just condensed a month of conversations into 35 minutes.
Yeah.
And we'll have that, you know, I'm confident we'll have that letter of intent signed, you know, in a week, maybe a week and a half. And that's a deal we'll make.
Yeah. No,
that,
that's
that stuff. I mean, that pays for the whole thing.
There you go.
That makes it all worth it.
Yeah. Right. No, that's, and what's cool too is what's really cool about like, looking at the broker side of things on that is like both of those guys are guys that you'll probably transact with multiple times.
100%.
Because that guy needs sites. This guy has sites.
That's right.
He's always going to come to you because you're the tenant rep.
That's
right. Hey, man, I got this new one coming online. This would be perfect for XYZ tenant that I know you work with. And,
that's right.
And there you go, you know. And so the fact that y'all can just sit down and knock it out is, I mean, it's very impressive. Like I was like, man, this is, you know, I'm just kind of driven around my dirty streets of Brook Hollow my whole life, but this has all been going on outside of here. So we really enjoyed it. It was really cool. So I think we'll be there because we will grow into that space just on the equity provider side and, you know, be a resource for, you know, some of those up and coming developers. And so I think we'll be there on a consistent basis. So, well, one thing I like to always kind of ask really successful brokers are like, kind of what are the things you do on the regular that like, I got to do this. Like these are like the three things I do that like,
sure,
I need to win. So
yeah. For me, it's, you know, it's setting goals and then figuring out, you know, what are the steps to get there and then executing on those. Right. So what are my, you know, at the end of the year, I do a look back.
Yeah.
Where did all my money come from last year?
Yeah.
What's the breakdown, right?
Yeah.
So I look at, you know, not only what revenue did I earn per client, but then what's that total percentage of my revenue?
Yeah.
So if a client is 30% of my revenue, but they're taking up 50% of my time, that's a problem.
Yeah.
I need to recalibrate. I need to figure out that relationship dynamic. Mm-hmm. Alternatively, if it's 30% of my revenue and it's only 5% of my time, shame on me. I need to figure out that dynamic as well, because that's a client that I'm not servicing appropriately.
Yeah.
So I always do a look back on last year. How did I do? You know, how does it stack up? What could I have done better? Who are my most important clients? Who are my least valuable clients? You know, trim the fat sometimes, right? If you've got a client who just historically year over year has not been producing for you and has taken up your time, it's probably time to have a hard conversation.
Yeah.
Alternatively, where can I grow that business? Maybe they're dormant because I'm not giving them enough attention and we're not focused on their growth. Okay, well, shame on me. I need to figure that piece out.
Yeah.
So to me, that look back is key. And then what do I want to do next year? How do I hit those numbers? What of those revenue numbers can I duplicate? What can I grow? What's going to decrease? Because we've now executed on their build strategy and they're going to go dormant for a while.
Yeah.
So in my mind, it's trying to figure out the revenue component of what we've done and what we're going to do, what we're forecasting. And then how do we break that down? Where do I need to spend more time or less time? And then, you know, kind of continuing to look back at that throughout the year. We've got our WIP reports that we're tracking monthly. Yep. What deals are flowing? When do we expect those to close? All of those things. And, you know, you try not to, in a perfect world, it's a steady state. That's not the way real estate works. You got some where you sign five leases in a month and others that you sign one. Yeah. So, you know, how do you get that as even keel as you can across the board and continue to push those? And then also creating a target list. What are the clients that you want to go after?
Yeah.
How do we prioritize those and make sure we're chasing them appropriately as their expansion continues? So those are two big things. You know, for me, it's, man, I've also got to get in the gym. I got to get my head right. Yeah. You know, I'm just not the same person if I'm not doing something physically to, right. you know, keep myself sharp. And so, you know, I would love to be the guy that woke up at 4 o'clock in the morning and went cold plunged every day and then, you know, read on the treadmill and then worked out. I'm not that guy. You know, I'm either in the office at, you know, 6:30 or 7, or I'm with the kids and I get to drop them off at school and yeah. take them to Starbucks and then, you know, take them to school and then head to the office at 9 o'clock. So yeah. it's, for me, it's either, you know, get down there early and get going mm-hmm. or it's spend time with family and, you know, be able to enjoy that morning. And then show up a little bit later when traffic dies down. But at some point in time during the day, you got to figure out whether that's at lunch or, mm-hmm. you know, early morning or at night when you get home. But being able to kind of free your mind is a great way for me to wind it down. Otherwise, it's hard for me to turn it off, in all yeah. honesty. I could work until 1 o'clock in the morning, you know, yeah. every day if possible. Jess was out of town, I don't know, a year ago. Yeah. And she was gone with the girls for probably 3 days, which rarely happens in my house. And I looked back and I'm like, holy cow. Like, I worked until 1 o'clock in the morning every single night.
Yeah.
But I talked to her. I'm like, hey, do you know how much money we made this week?
Yeah.
No, you know, to have uninterrupted focus on just what we do.
That's why you young guys that listen to this.
Yeah.
That don't have kids and a wife, you should be working 80 to 90 hours a week.
I love what I do. Yeah. You know, it's signing a lease to me. I mean, mm-hmm. I'm in the truck and I get an email that X deal just closed and it's like, yeah. heck yeah. You yeah. know, and whether it's a, you know, a 3,000 square foot tenant or a 30,000 square foot tenant, it's like, man, you know, you feel like you got to check something off your list.
Yeah.
And keep it going. And, you know, speaking of that, the other thing is, you know, kind of prioritizing your daily tasks. So
yeah.
I do always try to start off the day with what do I want to get accomplished this day? And nothing feels better than striking through that when it's done.
Yeah.
And moving that off your plate. You know, I try to keep the emails down in my inbox. If I've got, you know, I can't sleep. If I've got more than 35 emails, I haven't closed out my day.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'll crack open the laptop at 10 o'clock when the kids are in bed and Jess is in bed. And, you know, I've got to clean the slate to something that's manageable for me, or else I'm dreaming about it while I'm sleeping.
Yeah. No, it's, you know, I used to wake up real early and all that stuff and do all that, but I'm kind of, I'd say the past 3 months I've been like, I'm just going to sleep until I get up.
Right.
And if I get up at 5 and start working, I'll start working.
Right.
If I get up at 6:30, then, you know, I'll take the kids to school or something like that too. I mean, I'm looking at my son. I'm like, well, this is the last semester I'm taking to school because you'll have a driver's license next time. So like, I got to get into this. So
yeah.
You know, the physical side of things too is pretty cool. Me and my son started jiu-jitsu, man. It's nice. Been nice. You just like, I don't have my phone and it's just like, I get to maybe physically take out my aggressions on the people that drove me nuts for the day.
I love it.
Maybe I get my ass whipped. It's very 50-50 in there.
It's going to be good either way.
Yeah. So that's been a lot of fun, but very similar. Like I'm at that point where I just want to take my kids and all that stuff. But like there's been times when Tammany will go out of town with the kids or something and it's like, did I just work? Like
100%.
Like Saturday night, I ended up just by myself. And I was like, I went to bed at like 10 and I woke up at 5 the next morning on Sunday and I worked till like 1. And it was like, you know, I was like just cranking stuff out.
Totally.
And, but I'm pretty obsessed with it too from that standpoint, you know, but I enjoy what I do too, you know,
that's the key.
If you're not fired, you know, if you're not fired with enthusiasm about it, you should probably be fired with enthusiasm. So
it's true. It's true.
But, I always like to know this too. Is there any book you read that really like really changed you a lot?
So most recently I finished, I don't know, a couple months ago, book called The Surrender Experiment.
Yeah.
And the idea is kind of, you know, in his eyes, it's a spirit, right? In our eyes, it's God. But at the end of the day, the message is the same. It's kind of the, you know, giving it up to the higher power of putting you in the right places at the right time and surrendering to what the experience is in front of you.
Yeah.
Instead of constantly listening to the voice in your head that maybe tells you, you can't do this, or you shouldn't be, you know, or you said the wrong thing, or whatever it may be. Just realizing that the universe is going to set you up for success if you live the right way and do the right things. And I didn't realize when I bought the book, but it's a guy who was in Gainesville, Florida, actually.
Oh, okay.
And ended up starting multiple companies, and one of them he sold for over $1 billion.
Wow.
And, you know, he's just a hippie that wore flip-flops and kind of surrendered himself to the experiment. And it was a great book. I really enjoyed that. So that was my most recent one. I'm reading, you know, 10 times is easier than 2 times right now.
Yeah.
So I'm only 2 chapters into that one. But, you know, it's for a long time, I didn't read many books. I would listen to them and what have you. And I've tried to make that part of my routine at night instead of sitting there staring at your phone, which could take you down a rabbit hole. It's, you know, whatever, 20 minutes of reading before bed really kind of relaxes my mind and helps me fall asleep. So books have become more of a thing. Unreasonable Hospitality is one that I just finished, and Will, I enjoy that.
One of our equity partners told us about that, and Will's been reading it. He loves it.
Yeah, it's fantastic. It's kind of over-delivering to a client's expectation and what that can mean. This is based on, you know, restaurants, and 11 Madison Park is the restaurant that they launched. And, you know, just great stories in there with Danny Meyer, restaurateur out of New York City. And so anyways, that was a fantastic book as well.
Yeah, no, that's what we were down in San Antonio looking at one of our assets, and like Will kind of literally pulled something from that book. It's like, hey, this guy has this door that's been messed up. It's really his responsibility, but let's just fix it.
Right.
And so I was like, yeah, just fix it. Like, you know, we're fixing to come up on a renewal with them. Like, so, but,
it's amazing how far that stuff takes you.
Yeah.
You know, whether it's little things, you know, your client's flying in late at night, you send your car to go pick them up and they're not having to worry about Ubers at, you know, 1 o'clock in the morning or, you know, you're out to dinner with clients and, you know, you've got, everything's already taken care of and, you know, it's all handled, or, you know, that stuff goes a long way to me. Knowing your client's spouse's name and their kids' names and how old they are and, you know, when your client's birthday is and all of that stuff, it's truly creating that relationship dynamic that is more than just a transaction.
Well, it's effort.
People love that.
That takes effort, you know, and people appreciate effort.
Yeah. So you can go to my, you know, go to my contacts and click on a client. In the notes section is all of those things.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's like that shows that you care versus just, hey, let's, when do we close our next transaction and move on down the road?
All right. Well, what's something no one knows about you? Or most people don't know about you? What's something unique about you that most people don't know?
I would say I'm an Eagle Scout. There's one.
Okay. I did not know that.
Yeah.
That's cool.
I came up in scouting and had great experiences, and we traveled a ton and camped every month and just had a blast. And so that was a great part of, you know, my childhood growing up.
Yeah.
Got my Eagle Scout. That's still on my resume today.
Sure. It's a big accomplishment.
Yeah, it was. Yeah. You know, as a 16, 17-year-old kid. And, you know, it's funny because I look back at it now and, you know, I was just having fun along the way. I just got to check, you know, milestones as we went and ended up finishing it. But it's almost like getting a degree. It's not, it just shows that you stuck with something all the way through the finish, especially when you're young and still developing.
Yeah.
And so we had great experiences and, you know, I learned so much from that, whether it was, you know, we would have to shop for ourselves as our own, you know, little patrol, and and we had to feed ourselves and cook our own meals and clean our own dishes. And, you know, mom and dad weren't there to watch over it. You were on your own. And so I knew how to, you know, by 12, I knew how to pack. I knew how to cook. I knew how to clean.
Yeah.
I knew, you know, we would have a budget going into the weekend. And if you spent it all on Little Debbie's, well, you're probably going to be pretty hungry come Saturday afternoon. So by the time I got to college, it was like, you know, you already had that down.
Yeah.
You knew how to manage a, you know, at least somewhat manage your, sure. you know, your house, if you will. So yeah. anyways, that was a fun experience that I would assume a lot of people wouldn't know about.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
And so when I had my girls, it was how do I keep that going in some stretch? So we did Indian Princess, Indian Guides mm-hmm. with both girls.
Yeah.
And so, you know, that was kindergarten through fifth grade. We go on 4 camps a year and mm-hmm. we go to YMCA camps. So it's not really camping.
Yeah,
we're in a cabin with bunk beds.
That's what women need anyways. So.
But we have a blast. You know, Mia graduated out after fifth grade and we look back. She'd been to 36 campouts with just me and her.
That's
never
awesome.
Missed one from the time kindergarten through fifth.
And yeah.
Vera will graduate out this year and it'll be almost the same number for her. So,
wow.
you know, great experiences and awesome time with me and the kids.
That's great.
Yeah.
Well, one other fun fact about you is you own donkeys.
I do own donkeys. There you go. That's a good fun fact that most people don't know.
Yeah. Get that good ag exemption going.
That they are worth their weight in gold, I assure you. So we love our donks.
Well, let's kind of wrap this up. What's your thoughts on the retail market? It seems like it's really, for the past couple of years, the Amazon effect was always out there.
Sure.
People were talking about that. But now all of a sudden, I feel like retail is like kind of leading the charge on asset class.
We are. And I think, you know, at the end of the day, people still want, you know, an experience, whether that's, you know, retail shopping, whether that's entertainment, mm-hmm. whether that's food and beverage, what have you. I'll tell you, we are very blessed to be in Dallas, right?
Yeah.
All of us are.
Yeah.
There's nowhere else in the country I would rather be, especially from a business standpoint, because other places retail-wise felt a significant impact during mm-hmm. COVID, post-COVID. And candidly, we really didn't. I mean, obviously it hurt during the moment of COVID, but we came out of that very quickly mm-hmm. compared to other marketplaces. And, you know, I think, you know, right now in Dallas, we have way more client demand than we have spaces to put them in. You know, if I had vacancies, I could, you know, we could fill almost any of them in quality space.
Yeah.
We have that many tenants still continuing to grow. So there's a big, you know, there's a big need to continue that growth pattern. Texas is a place people want to continue to expand.
Yeah.
The economics are here. The population continues to grow. The jobs are here. It just makes all the sense in the world that Dallas, you're either growing here already or it's on your growth plan, one of the two.
Yeah.
And, you know, so for us, it's trying to be in front of that and continue to grow. But I would tell you, I don't see any sort of slowdown.
Mm-hmm.
You know, obviously new development has definitely taken a hit with interest rates the way that they are.
But sure.
if you've got a good site, you've got good tenants, you're going to be able to figure that out.
Yeah.
And so, you know, even with the current market conditions, it's very rare that we're losing a deal for something. You know, we've got a pharmacy client that, you know, we're doing build-to-suits with throughout Dallas. And it's, the numbers have gotten harder to mm-hmm. make work, but the tenant's stepping up. You know, they have to continue growing.
Yeah.
They know there are holes in the market and they've just got to find a way to make those numbers work. So we're doing rent numbers now that would have been completely out of touch with Dallas 5 years ago are now on the table. And it's like, you know, sure. Does it hurt a little bit? Yes.
Yeah.
But are your sales still going to be there? And are these markets that you have to compete in? Your competitor's already there. You've got to grow competitor's not there. Let's try to get in front of it. You're going to find a way to make those make sense.
Yeah. No, that's, I don't know. It's retail's become a fascinating thing we've been learning about, and you know, you've scared the death out of us on some things too. So, but
that was only one.
No,
that was the worst case scenario. I just wanted to make sure you knew what the worst case scenario was.
Now we're learning. So,
but I've been in your ear about retail for 20 years now.
Oh yeah,
and I'm glad you're jumping in.
Yeah,
it's great.
It's interesting, man. We really really enjoy it. You know, what's great about it is the data's there.
Right.
Like. Man, industrial is great. You can make, there's a lot of arbitrage to be made, mm-hmm. you know, because the data isn't there. The data is there for retail. So that kind of compresses margins a little bit, but at the end of the day, you can scale. So that's what was really cool about. That was kind of a big takeaway of mine from ICSC. I was like, okay, well, everybody knows what everybody's doing here. So everybody knows the math, but at the end of the day, everybody's doing so much more volume. So that was interesting about it. So, well, Well, man, that's all I got. This was really fun. We'll have you on again. And man, I
appreciate you letting an alphabet boy on the podcast. Oh, yeah, you
give me some shit about that.
We get blasted every show at some point in time. So I'm glad to be on here.
Yeah, you know, I got to haze the crew. So, you know.
No, it's good.
No, I appreciate it. No, we got a property list with you guys right now. So Bo and Caleb are doing a phenomenal job. Brought us awesome. A great asset. And,
great guys.
And, yeah, they brought us a deal. We closed it in 17 days, man. It was a whirlwind, but we got it done. And so they're out trying to get a lease for us.
I love it.
So,
well, you're doing great things, man. I'm proud of you.
Yeah, thank you.
You've done a great job. You were obviously a great broker, and now you're turned into a heck of a developer and everything else. So,
yeah. This side is aggravating as the other. So
if it were easy, everybody'd do it,
that's
right?
That's right. They would. Yeah. So.
I appreciate it.
Well, cool, man. Well, thanks. Yep. We'll have you back.
You got it, buddy.
See ya.